Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to Solomon on Blast, and welcome to 2015. We all took last week off for the Christmas holiday, but we're all back here today. Welcome to the new year, Fred. It's good to have you back again. Oscar, it's good to have you back also.
Thank you.
I hope you guys had a great Christmas and a good new year. And we're still in our holiday vacation mode, basically. So we wanted to keep it light today, nothing too heavy. Probably all those holiday sweets that we've been eating made us heavy enough as it is, right? Yeah, everybody's got that problem. But we still welcome your thoughts, so give us a call, 750-7456. It is a new year, so I'm sure we'll have lots of new stories to cover over the coming year. But given that we weren't here last week, which would have been the ideal time to review the past year, I thought a look back at some of the key stories we talked about last year would still be worthwhile, but from a slightly different aspect. A look back at the past year by looking back even further, a century ago, in fact, or around that length of time. Why? Well, Solomon's wisdom reminds us to do so, indirectly at least. But, and although we've said it a lot of times, it still bears repeating. Ecclesiastes 1:9, that which has been is what will be, that which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything new of which it might be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. And like I said a couple weeks ago, although technology keeps changing and improving, human nature doesn't change. So by looking back, we can kind of understand the times we live in and even to some extent the future to come. So in addition to looking back at last year's stories, by looking back a century or so, we're going to also look at this upcoming year by looking at the past. I think once you see the parallels from last year, you'll probably agree it can help see what might be in store for the coming year. I'm in no way claiming to be a fortune teller, prophet, or anything like that, and I'm not going to make any future predictions, especially given this show is taped and somebody could hold me to them in the future. But it's still worth looking forward to understand the times that we live in, and we can do that by looking back at some of the things that happened in the past. So we're going to go through that after we come back from our first commercial break here. We'll come back and take a look at some of the stories that we covered last year, but from the aspect of even further back in time. We'll be right back. We're back with Solomon on Blast, taking a quick look at some of the stories that we covered and a relationship to the past. 2014, one of the big stories, obviously, was the Israel-Hamas war, the goings on in the Middle East there that started back in July. We covered that story pretty extensively. We had Pastor Warner on talking about why we really needed to support Israel. And in looking back even further, I look back to 1914, and in that time frame, it wasn't Israel, it was considered Palestine. Right now, of the 7 million people that live in Israel, within Israel itself, about 20% are Arabs. And in the world today, there's 12.9 million Jews, but there are 1.48 billion Muslims, 25% of the world population, living in that area. And Israel's surrounded by 270 million of those Muslims. And there's 8,000 square miles of land around Israel. Muslim land area is about 5 million square miles. So Israel's pretty much surrounded by Muslims. And as part of that whole Israel war, one of the things that had happened here in the United States was that Congress approved a measure to provide $225 million of aid to Israel in order that they could replenish the rockets associated with the Iron Dome system that had been used so effectively in that conflict between Israel and Hamas. And following signing of the bill, which both the Senate and the House set aside their differences for once last year, the White House stated that the United States has been clear since the start of this conflict that no country can abide rocket attacks against its civilians and that it supports Israel's right to defend itself against such attacks. Well, now go back to 1914 Palestine. The British census at that point in time placed the population of Palestine at almost 690,000 people, of whom no more and perhaps less were than 60,000 were Jews. So there was a very small population of Jews at that point in time in that same area comparatively to the rest of the population. But 100 years ago, the Jews of Palestine also suffered terribly from hunger, disease, and oppression. The territory was ruled at that time by the Ottoman Empire, and the Middle East was looking at the beginning of World War I. Turkey had abolished agreements with the European powers, which granted them elements of sovereignty over their subjects in the Ottoman Empire. So for many Jews, the French, British, and Russian protectors were gone. The financial assistance that they had been receiving from European Jewish brethren had evaporated. And in late 1914, the war began with Turkey massing troops in Palestine and the Sinai to move against the British. The Turkish army had prepared for the attack by conscripting locals, including Jews, and by stealing supplies, food, and animals from those people there in Palestine. Well, the United States came along just as we had last year at the time when Israel most needed us. In August of 1914, the American ambassador to Turkey, Henry Morgenthau, had sent an urgent telegram to the New York Jewish tycoon Jacob Schiff. In it, he wrote, "Belligerent countries stopping their assistance. Serious destruction threatens thriving colonies. $50,000 needed by responsible committee. Dr. Rupin, chairman, to establish loan institute and support families whose breadwinners have entered the army. Conditions certainly justify American help. Will you undertake matter?" Signed, Morgenthau. Well, realizing the difficulty in bringing money into Palestine past the corrupt Turkish officials, Morgenthau also appealed to the Secretary of State, William Jennings Bryan, for assistance, and it came in the form of U.S. Navy ships. In October 1914, the U.S. Navy landed in Jaffa Harbor and delivered $50,000 to the U.S. Consul General for distribution to the Jewish community. And a total of 13 different visits were made by ships, which provided support, money, food, and aid to the Jews of Palestine until the United States had entered the war in 1917. So as Solomon says so aptly, nothing new under the sun. Seems like 1914 was very similar to 2014.
Yeah, and it was actually very historic because it was from that war that the first phases of making Israel into a nation actually began to unfold. They had signed the Balfour Agreement, you know, they signed it a couple years later after the war, but without that war, that would never have been wrestled away from the Ottoman Empire.
Right. And the particular London report declared the Jews of Israel would have succumbed had not financial help arrived from America. America was at that time the one country which, through its political and financial position, was able to save Jewish Palestine permanently from going under. So it's interesting that United States was there.
There was a video series called Against All Odds, Israel Survives, that was produced probably, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. Anyway, one of the stories that they detail has to do with this war. And what's so amazing about this, this is actually pretty fascinating, is the British officer that was stationed there in Palestine during this time as they were at a standoff with the Turks was inspired by a story out of the book of 1 Samuel in which Saul's son, Jonathan, was able to take a certain piece of land from the Philistines. Mm-hmm. And he actually was reading a Bible and got inspired, and they employed the exact strategy and end up winning a phenomenal battle victory based on him reading a passage and employing it. So it was kind of an amazing time, and yet very historic, but also when you look back on it, extremely prophetic as well.
Yeah. And the other thing that came out of this was a lot of these U.S. ships that had stopped along the coast there had left with a lot of the Jews that had to flee because they were being expelled by the Turks or they were being persecuted. And there was actually one gentleman by the name of Alexander Aronson, whose brother Aaron and sister Sarah were founders of the anti-Turk spy network that helped the British. And the sister Sarah actually ended up killing herself after prolonged Turkish torture. Without the Americans' help, without these U.S. ships, Israel, the Jews within Palestine at that point, probably would have been eradicated.
And yeah, this was not an easy time. I mean, that's an understatement. Mm-hmm. But for Jewish people around the world, because politically, they were still very much despised around the world, and we're talking in particular amongst the European powers, and they couldn't find any country to go to. It was very difficult. They would arrange passage on some steam ship, and they would end up being denied entrance into another country. It was a terrible, terrible time. I mean, there was a short story written about this. I can't remember the name of it, but it was a tragic story on how the one steamliner filled with Jews landed at a certain port, but politically the British, I believe it was in Palestine, did not allow them to disembark. So they actually had to blow up their own ship with passengers on board, knowing then the British would be bound to save them if they were suffering, and they would have to change under another law, the auspices of another law, to go out and say, okay, we can now help you because you're drowning in the sea. And they literally had to risk their own lives and the lives of their children in order for the British to respond to their need. These were astonishing stories, I mean, and they're very true and very real.
Right.
And so it took a good 50 years in the first half of the 20th century to get any kind of traction at all. It's pretty astonishing that they survived.
Yeah, and we can't forget that the problems still continue, and I think if we look forward into 2015, that we're going to see the problems haven't gone away and that Israel will still remain one of the lead stories at some point in time through the year.
Why do you think that's true, Doug?
Because it is the center of the world, and they're God's chosen people. And I think when envy and jealousy from the rest of the world, and even from a spiritual aspect, it's always going to be there.
There's a very, it says in Revelation 13 that the dragon went off to make war. And there's a very real picture here of Israel never ever lightening up until all things be fulfilled.
That's right. Now, one of the other stories that we had covered, obviously, was a big deal in 2014 was immigration. That was a big issue for 2014. And as Solomon so aptly says, there's nothing new under the sun. We've seen many times this past year that immigration has been a forefront news story. It may go away for a little while, but it always seems to come back. Well, if you look into the past, into the history of the United States, prior to 1875, there was nothing in place to control immigration. And prior to 1882, there were actually no formal acts that controlled immigration. Now, the Act of 1875 prohibited the importation of women for purposes of prostitution and the immigration of aliens who were undergoing conviction in their own country for felonious crimes other than political. 1882 Act levied a tax of 50 cents for every passenger not a citizen of the United States and forbade the landing of convicts, lunatics, idiots, or of any other person unable to take care of himself or herself without becoming a public charge.
It sounds like Acorn voters to me.
It's interesting that they had a fairly basic approach to how to deal with immigration. In 1885, the Act of 1885 forbade the immigration of aliens under contract to labor. So a lot of that had to do with the Japanese and the Chinese laborers. In 1907, Theodore Roosevelt, as president, signed a gentleman's agreement with Japan to stop the importation of Japanese laborers to America. And interestingly, in 1917, literary tests were required of immigrants. Immigrants were required to write and read a language. It didn't have to be English, but they had to be able to write and read. And the 1917 Immigration Act increased the entry head tax to $8. So it's been something that's always been in our country's history, is dealing with immigration. Right now, it just happens to be on the border with Mexico and people coming in that way. In the 20s, Congress actually instituted a series of quotas. One of them was, in 1921, they had an Emergency Quota Act that provided, based on the 1910 census, 3% of a European nationality that resided in the U.S. could be permitted to enter the country each year. So there was a specific number that they were allowing in out of the European countries. In 1924, they lowered that to 2%, and what was based on the 1890 census. So it also provided no more than 150,000 immigrants per year on a national origins basis. So in reality, we've always been discriminating on one particular...
Albeit a very liberal policy.
Yes.
You know, I think what makes this so complicated in the Southwest USA is because... you know, you have to go all the way back to the Mexican-American War, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, and the Gadsden Purchase. I mean, they have a lot to do with how immigration happened, because the truth is there's a good number of Hispanics slash Mexican-Americans, however you want to call it, whatever you want to say, that really are not immigrants to the United States. I should say, right. We're not immigrants to the United States.
Right. It was a purchase, and they became...
My father's family had a land grant in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So that came through the treaty signed in 1848. You know, there's some of us out here who have family that actually fought in the American Civil War. And yet, there's some people, they don't make any distinction at all between somebody who actually comes from America and somebody who, just snuck across the border yesterday. They don't make any distinction whatsoever. So here's another thing. Even people, the Mexican-Americans of the Southwest, we're talking about Bisbee, Douglas, parts of Nogales, Arizona, all over this area, they're not immigrants either. The border moved.
Right.
It's irredentia, you know. Right. The border moved on them.
It was all owned by Mexico at that point
in
time.
Yeah, and they were all basically, Sonora and Arizona were one at some point. They were really one territory with virtually no border, or I should say they had a virtual border. I could say it the other way around. There was no border. And they would come and go, and they would move across, and there was no... there was no real standard in place that made any distinctions between the two sides. So all of this evolved, and so that's what makes this so complicated an issue. There are people here in Tucson on the conservative side that do not respect the fact that the Mexican Americans have been living in Tucson forever. You know, they don't get that. They don't understand that is Tucson. It's not like it's somewhere else. That's the history of Tucson. So it's very complicated. It's not that simple that they came here, you people go back there. I mean, here's another issue that probably gets in my craw is they can't make a distinction between anybody with a Hispanic last name in America. There's no distinctions made whatsoever. And what it comes down to, there are just a lot of people that are just not interested in the history, and they want easy political answers to everything, and they don't exist. There's two sides to this story, that are very, very real.
And it was very similar throughout the history of the country with regards to, there was at one point in time an absolute ban on Orientals coming into the country.
Right.
So we've always had immigration issues, and I think we always will. It's part of our history. It's part of the fact that we're a country that people want to come to. And without that desire for people to come here, the immigration issue is going to continue to happen. So we'll be right back after a quick commercial break, and we'll continue with our discussion of the Back to the Future kind of thing. We're back again with Solomon on Blast, continuing a little bit of a look in the past, through the past. A couple other another story that we had covered was big throughout the 2014 was the whole Ferguson riots issue. Obviously, there was a lot of turmoil going on with regards to that, and in some cases continues to go on. But if you look even further back in time, things really haven't changed that much. Actually, there was a article about the race riots that occurred back in 1917 in East St. Louis. And a lot of these race riots were because of the fact that after the Civil War, a lot of people from the South moved up north looking for jobs, and the fact that the World War I was in full swing, there was a lot of production going on in the Midwest, and people were coming up from the South to get jobs and be able to have the opportunity to work there. Blacks, for the first time in history, had migrated en masse from the South into the North, and following on that, they organized to challenge the concept of whites and the established order that was in place there. And unfortunately, a lot of the result was bloody conflict in that area. And whites, even though they were from effectively the north side, had not learned to accept blacks as part of the landscape and resented what they called the invasion at that point in time. And East St. Louis was known as the Pittsburgh of the West and was particularly appealing to those looking for work there because of the economy and the reputation for good-paying jobs. Segregation was still the established order. Blacks were treated to separate wards of the two city hospitals. They had to be tended to by black physicians. They had their own washrooms and plants and packing houses. They were segregated in labor gangs. They ate in different sections of the dining hall. Everything about it was still a significant amount of segregation. And as long as they were a small portion of the population, they weren't conceived as a threat. Race problems were really, at that point in time, pretty much isolated to the South. But because of that boom in the economic times with regards to the war, the percentage of the population of blacks had grown significantly, exponentially, and there were a lot of issues election-wise and whatnot that caused a lot of these problems there. And it was even worsened with the labor management problems. One of the biggest producers in there, aluminum ore, had some 1,906 workers form a union, which the company refused to recognize, and they fired a lot of those workers and decided to import blacks into those jobs when the unions were trying to establish themselves. So by hiring in the blacks at the plant, it created a lot of animosity between the people, and resulted in a lot of riots. One particular one was the one in East St. Louis in 1917.
This sounds like typical immigration employment strategies, right?
Right, and it's interesting that it applies also to our immigration
issue. Even regionally in the United States,
right.
It's same dynamics.
Same dynamics. Now we have a lot of the immigrants, illegals or legals, coming into the United States and taking jobs for low pay, and there's a lot of animosity.
There's some uncomfortable realities here, though, Doug, and that is, and I say this carefully, and I don't mean to endorse any kind of violence or anything, but what I'm trying to say is you have to fight, and I'm using that word with quotation marks, you have to fight for your place. You have to represent, and nothing happens easily or automatically, right?
Right.
They came, they wanted to work, they were being challenged. It was not merely race as the issue. The unions fight with each other all the time. I mean, it's not all about race.
No, it was a lot of it was
political
economic.
And economic as, yep, well. And you have to fight for your place in society. And they represented, and, you know, you think about the strides that were made from 1917 to 1977. It's pretty amazing.
Yes, absolutely.
In a lot of ways. In fact, without getting too political, we can go the other way and say, if it wasn't for programs like the Great Society, the African Americans were making pretty good strides, mm-hmm, up until that point. So yeah, maybe in 50 years, all of a sudden everything got upended in the name of compassion.
One of the things that really caught my eye in this article was the fact, and I'd mentioned it when we'd talked about Ferguson, was that there was a gun shop that was basically sold out in Ferguson because so many people had been coming in and buying guns to protect themselves. Well, in this article, it says, a letter to the editor of the East St. Louis Mail illustrates the attitude. It's noticeable that whenever revolvers form part of the display of a store window, they at once attract the passing attention of people. One pawnbroker can tell you that more pistols were bought there in that time frame than at any other point in time. They were, and in some cases, a lot of it was the blacks that were buying the guns. He says the idea was that the guns served the purpose of defending themselves against people and as a meal ticket when they got hungry, according to the particular article. But it was just interesting that here in the pawn shop windows, there was actually signs, buy a gun for protection. And the same thing was happening 100 years ago with regards to this situation as it was in 2014.
Bringing it up to date, and, you know, it's just tragic, some of the things that we've seen unfold in the last couple of months, especially with the two cops,
yes,
in Brooklyn getting assassinated, how they have tried to pit this as the African-American male versus the police, which is really not the story at all. These are all different, distinct stories. We've talked about this, the story in New York about, you know, I can't breathe, you know.
Right.
You know, that was a sad and tragic development of someone that I think they should have been held accountable, more accountable for that. However, the point is, this is not African Americans versus the police, as it's been portrayed for political reasons. And that's what's so tragic about these things. There's so many more factors feeding into this,
right,
that to simply narrow it to that one issue, it really is someone who's trying to use it to leverage society. That's all I can say. They're trying to leverage use it for political leverage and to grow their you know, they're caused by it.
The difference with these riots is that they were typically white people attacking and burning blacks in their homes and everything.
For them simply trying to make a living and find their place in society. And what else were they supposed to do?
Right. And so, like I said, as Solomon says, there's nothing new under the sun. This stuff has happened 100 years ago. It continues to happen. So it's not anything new. One of the other, I found just a few different headlines that were interesting. One from 2014, Russia moves troops into the Crimea to protect its interest against Ukraine. That occurred last year. 1914, Russia mobilizes troops along the Austrian border. So not much different there. March 11th of this past year, refugees from Syria poured into the Kingdom of Jordan because of all that was going on in Syria. August of 1914, refugees flee from Belgium town of Tirlemont in the face of German invasion. So the headlines don't change much. Back in March of last year, U.S. President warns Russian President Putin over involvement in the Ukraine. 1914, U.S. Secretary of State Brian sends a note to Germany demanding Germany disavow the attacks on the Lusitania and make immediate reparations. However, the note is written only to pacify excited public opinion, according to Brian at that time. February of last year, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry claimed that climate change needs urgent action and that a window of time remained open, but not for long. And I think he's just way off base there with regards to that versus what was important to the Secretary of State back in 1914. It was war and the state of the world versus the climate change.
You're scaring me, you know, with all these parallels.
Sorry.
All of that led to World War One.
I know, and that's what I'm saying. Now what happens in 2015 when we go forward? Well, it could lead to another world war, potentially. So in our next segment, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and look at the future with respect to the past. What's 2015 going to look like? Well, we'll go back to the future and see. All right, we're back. So what does the future look like? Well, if we have 1915 as a reference point, it looks pretty scary. But we do have Joe waiting on the line here. Joe called in to Power Talk 1210, Solomon Plass. Joe, what's your statement here this morning?
Hey, is this Doug Martin from Investment Advisors?
Investment Advisors, no.
Did you do a show on investments on another radio station?
Yes.
Hey, you know what? I used to chew the rag with you all quite a bit on your show.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, well, hey, anyways, I've been meaning to ask you if this was you. So,
this,
anyway, sure,
this
nice
was
to hear you again,
and still is me.
Yeah, it's good to hear you again.
Thanks.
You know, yeah, this is massive institutional failure at all levels. And it's interesting how you draw the analogy with 1914, and now you're going to go into 1915, because
yeah.
I think that there is a lot of what's going on in terms of geopolitics, because those are always, that's how we always do it. We always placate these little geopolitics things, and we trumpet it up into weapons sales and weapons manufacturing, and we choose to spend on what we want to spend on. And right now, the focus is not on the real economy. And it ties itself to Ferguson because we don't get real economics. That's why I like free market concepts. It erases racism because people become consumers. They don't become black guy hanging out waiting for a food stamp check. That gets canceled out because, A, they would see that 50 million people on food stamps 20% of the houses that are dealt with in the real estate market in a transaction feature, they come from foreclosure status.
Yep.
You wash that with Dow 18,000 as of Friday and some change. You know, there's institutional failures going around, and it sells guns.
So what's your prediction for 2015? One prediction that you would give us.
It's the derivative market. You and I used to chat about this all the time, and I appreciate that so much about you, Doug.
Okay.
You're the only guy who knows what hypothecation is. That's the thing that's going to come back and smoke us in terms of we won't be able to cover the risk in that market. And I think it's going to come back, whether it's energy stocks, whether it's the bank stocks, positions against hard metals. When you are printing a lot of money like this, sooner or later, we're going to practice free market principles.
Hopefully. Okay, thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Got another caller waiting.
See you guys.
Stay with us. Well, okay, Oscar's still working with that one. So what does 2015 look like? Well, let's take a quick look at 1915. January 13th, 1915. Let's hope this doesn't happen. Avezzano earthquake occurred January 13th in southern Italy. In 1915, the epicenter was located in the town of Avezzano in southern Italy. 30,000 direct fatalities resulted from the earthquake, destroying the epicentral area. The earthquake took place around 8 o'clock local time. The shaking was felt in Rome also. The entire town was literally toppled from the shaking, and only one high-rise building survived. 96% of its population was eliminated almost simultaneously, the worst casualty zone.
Yeah, one of the ways we can comfort ourselves.
Hold on. Your mic's not on there, Fred. Hold on a second. All right, go ahead.
One of the ways we can comfort ourselves with that kind of news, I mean, that's just horrific, is that the building codes of 2015 have improved quite a bit.
Right.
You know, I used to live in San Francisco, and one of the things we all understood there is that the high rises are on wheels. Mm-hmm. So whenever there's an earthquake, they roll back and forth and keeps absorbs all that tension. So,
and we can't predict those kind of things.
Yeah, you can't predict those kind of things.
Natural disasters.
Yeah.
But that was one that occurred, which was pretty significant in 2015. Here's another one. April 5th, boxer Jess Willard, the latest great white hope, defeated Jack Johnson with a 26-round knockout in Cuba. He became very popular among Americans for bringing back the championship to the whites. Now, whether we got a great white hope in terms of boxing world, I don't know.
Well, the Russians, you know?
Yeah.
All the great white hope stuff has gone over to the Eastern Bloc. That's why they compete so well in the NBA, you know? The whole Eastern Bloc is not a whole lot different from the inner city of the United States. So it's not a racial thing, right?
No.
It's a lot of it is just basically where you grow up. What you got to deal with.
And the talent that you've got. Let's see. How about women's suffrage? In 1915, it was actually introduced in Denmark and Iceland. So have we made a little bit? Hopefully we've made some progress in that area. Whether women's suffrage will be an issue in 2015? Probably not likely.
Sure, in Iran, in Iraq,
not likely in the United States.
Not in the United States.
In other places in the world, it may very well be, because they don't have that. We have
in Saudi Arabia.
Well,
the latest story is that they got to wear burqas now on TV. So,
they
got some work to do.
Maybe think.
Where's Gloria Steinem when they need her? Why isn't she in Egypt?
I don't know. Maybe she's in her wheelchair or hanging out somewhere at the old folks' home. Here's one for you, Fred, a prediction. This was actually 1915. October 13th, Boston Red Sox beat the Philadelphia Phillies 4-1 in the 12th World Series. Any chance the Boston Red Sox will win the World Series this year?
Well, you know, the great story was it took them, to 04 to win it because of the famous trade, infamous trade, where they traded Babe Ruth to the Yankees and took them quite a few years in order to get back. So they've actually won 3 World Series since 04. So they're not doing too bad. So they could, yeah. They just stole the panda from the Giants, so who knows?
So that's a prediction. Well, one of the other things that I think will be an issue is health care. That'll probably be a really big issue coming into 2015, mainly because of the fact that we've got a tax season based on 2014 coming up that will, I think, open people's eyes with regards to what the whole Affordable Care Act really involves. Back in 1915, I don't think they had those kind of issues at that point in time. The tax laws were pretty minimal and affected only a very small portion of the population. Now, here's an interesting item. December 12, 1915, Frank Sinatra was born. And it's hard to predict, you know, who's going to be born in 2015 that someday will make a big name for themselves.
What was that, Hoboken, New Jersey?
Hoboken, New Jersey, that's right. The only child of Italian Sicilian immigrants, Natalie Della and Antonio Martino Sinatra. So, who in this year? Beards were a big thing back in 1915.
Yeah, in fact, that seems to have made a comeback. I think we were talking at another time about, I was mentioning how I just read about Governor Christie of New Jersey not really playing well in the polls.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a moment of inspiration. I've never heard anyone else say this, but I was telling you that I think Christie should go retro.
Go back to the Grover Cleveland.
Yeah, line. The lamb chop sideburns. People will never accept him standing there trying to suck in his stomach. You know, it's not going to work. So what you know, that's the JFK approach. It's not going to work. He needs to go 100-year retro. Lamb chop sideburns, ascot ties, tails, you know? And a chomp on a cigar while he campaigns. And I think maybe he'll have a much better chance with the, I think he could win some young voters that way, in fact.
I think that's where the comeback of the popularity of the beard is at, is in the young people. Right, Oscar?
Absolutely. So, you know, I don't know what, you know, all these high-paid, you know, experts that these guys surround themselves with, like, you know, you have them on the treadmill 4 hours a day, and it's not working.
Yeah.
So
just grow a beard. And
just grow a beard and go with it, man.
Go retro. Okay. So those are some of the possibilities of what's happening in 2015 based off of, to some extent, what was going on in 1915. One last one. Einstein's theory of general relativity was formulated in November of 1915. What could we see in 2015?
Now,
little AI action there.
When did he won the Nobel Prize? In 17?
17, I believe, yes.
So he had been working on that theory since, what, 1905 or something like that?
Right.
I'm not looking at any numbers, but I was just...
That's what I remember.
I read the biography by Walter Isaacson, so I'm just trying to remember. But, you know, I obviously the man's theory was solid enough to where you could base real science off of it. So it wasn't just, you know, an empty philosophy you get from smoking too much medical marijuana.
Well, we'll have to see what comes along in 2015. And the beginning of a new year is always that time where people start making resolutions for the new year. Ecclesiastes, again, Solomon's wisdom, Ecclesiastes 9:10, he says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. He says, I returned and saw under the sun, the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happened to them all. So we can spend our time putting together New Year's resolutions, but overall, in the end, time and chance happens to us all. One principle, maybe, fame itself is not worth pursuing, especially when you're young. It may sometimes be worth attaining, but it's not worth pursuing. And I'd say, looking forward into the new year, our culture's kind of become one where fame is what seems to be the goal. If you can just get noticed on a YouTube video, then you'll be famous. But like anything else, the odds are against you. So you can always figure out a way to make money. You can't always figure out a way to regain lost time, lost relationships. So keep things in perspective. And until next week, think wisely. We'll be back next week.